Affordable housing is a basic human right, and to build a better Kentucky where all our people can thrive, safe and reliable housing is absolutely essential.
I wanted to be better and meet those goals, and it wouldn't have been possible without Kentucky housing.
Knowing that I had a roof over my head, food to eat, knowing that I didn't have to want for anything, that's a big plus.
Being a single parent and not having to worry about, housing, paying bills while, being in school.
But I am here to tell you that there is a lot of beauty in this part of the county.
Bringing it home with KHC.
Welcome to a special edition of KHC's podcast. Last week was the 2025 Kentucky Affordable Housing Conference. Over 700 affordable housing professionals convened in Covington for plenaries and small sessions built around the theme, From Analysis to Action, Accelerating Kentucky's Housing Supply. This reflects the work being done to address the housing supply gap, which was the theme of last year's conference. For this special episode, we spoke with three speakers at the conference who have expertise in collaborative efforts to accelerate the housing supply. Our first conversation is with Tara Johnson Nome, the Executive Director of the Northern Kentucky Area Development District. Tara was at the conference as part of a plenary and a session, both focused on the Northern Kentucky Housing Coalition and its Home for All initiative, which is a menu of high-impact strategies for accelerating home production in Northern Kentucky.
My name is Tara Johnson Nome, and I am the Executive Director of the Northern Kentucky Area Development District. We are a quasi-governmental nonprofit organization that was founded in 1971. We're a part of a network. So every county in Kentucky is within one of the 15 area development districts, and I just mentioned that because we're often behind the scenes a bit. We were created to provide technical expertise and regional convening services, regional planning services in some cases, to local governments, special districts, and nonprofit partners across the Commonwealth. So for us in Northern Kentucky, we serve the eight counties of Boone, Campbell, Carroll, Gallatin, Grant, Kenton, Pendleton, and Owen counties.
And so one of the things you're here talking about is Home for All.
Yeah.
So what is that and how did that even come about?
Home for All is the publication that we released in January of 2025. And when I say we, not just the Area Development District, but us and a coalition of partners were able to release Home for All in response to a housing data study that was done for our region and released in 2023. And so that came from some workforce development efforts that we had had ongoing. So the Area Development District is the fiscal agent and home, we like to call it, for the Northern Kentucky Workforce Investment Board and a number of workforce development efforts that are designed to connect job seekers and employers to each other. And so coming out of COVID, we saw that a lot of employers are really wanting to gear back up and bring people back into the workforce that, many had unfortunately been laid off, at the start of COVID. And they were having a really hard time of it. People had left the workforce, childcare was a challenge, which we knew, and we had local entities that were working on childcare, always have local entities working on transportation and mobility challenges, but housing kept coming up as an issue, as a barrier potentially to attracting and retaining enough talent. So through our workforce partners, we were able to partner with the Kentucky Career Center Network here in Northern Kentucky that the Workforce Investment Board oversees, as well as the Economic Development Office, BNKY. And we polled employers and we asked them, what are the barriers that you're facing? What do you think is keeping you from being able to hire who you want to hire? And 50% of all those employers said, yeah, we think housing is an issue. And so we were able to go to our local elected officials. That's the group that is on our board. We have 37 board members, 8 judges, executive, 18 mayors, and 11 citizen members, taking that to them and saying, hey, we're hearing that housing is an issue. What do you think about that? And all of them said, look, we feel like we need more data. And we knew that there was some data out there. Again, this is in 21, 22. There were some statewide studies, some county studies back then. A lot of folks doing good work, helping families find housing. But in terms of data tied to our workforce, what can our people that are living and working here today, what can they afford? We felt like there just wasn't enough to be able to make any kind of decisions that our policymakers would be able to pass in terms of policy. So that led to the data study. Then the data study came out and, no surprise, found a number of gaps, which meant, okay, well, what are we going to do about those gaps? Which led to a year-long coalition thinking about how those, what strategies would work. And we have a wide variety of communities in Northern Kentucky, urban, suburban, rural. And so we came up with this menu of strategies, we called it for a while, that ended up being the Home for All report.
So how do you help to coordinate efforts across the public, the private, and the nonprofit sectors? And are there any challenges to doing that?
Well, there's always challenges when you have committees and you have, you know, trying to have these coalitions. And, you know, one of the interesting things, I think, is that acknowledging at the beginning that everybody who's coming together to solve a problem is coming with their own background, their own set of knowledge, their own kind of technical vocabulary even, and often maybe similar but not exactly the same goals. And so thankfully we had looked at best practices that had happened just across the river in Hamilton County as well as across the nation about what kinds of topics were bubbling to the surface. We had the data study, which had a small chapter about, you know, potential strategies. And so we were able to divide the topics into policy and finance, new development, maintaining existing housing, and then community engagement. And so then once we divided those out, we wanted to make sure that we had representation from private sector, our nonprofit partners, kind of safety net folks, elected officials, and, you know, then other partners that would be interested in the topic in each one of those committees, so that we had that broad experience coming to every one of the conversations. And it was fascinating. You know, I was the staff member for the new development committee, and we had developers, you know, builders sitting right across the table from planners, and, you know, having real conversations about what could actually make it easier to build homes that were more affordable to local families. It was really cool.
What kind of impact has there been with Home for All so far?
So far, I think the process of the coalition meeting and then the release of the report in January has just opened up a whole line of dialogue that previously speaking was just not happening. And that has been really exciting. And I think the other piece that's been really exciting is seeing organizations, seeing employers, and seeing local governments in different, totally different forms, kind of making it their own. You know, taking, there's 50 strategies for a reason, because we know that our communities are at very different places in terms of development. Some are, you know, they would say they're built out. Some have a lot of greenfield left. And so allowing there to be this menu, as opposed to the group kind of saying, this is our plan, gives space for individual entities to take a piece and explore what that would look like in their own community or their own organization. You know, if they're an employer, what would it look like? You know, we maybe already give a childcare stipend. What would it look like to give a rent stipend? You know, and being able to explore some of those pieces, no matter if they are private, public, or, you know, nonprofit, I think has opened up a conversation where it's not just having people maybe turn it off because they already know that they don't fit with it. You know, it's been more open, and people have been like, oh, well, maybe that does apply to me.
Well, and speaking of that, could it be replicated in other communities across Kentucky, do you
think? I definitely think it could be replicated. One of the really cool things that happened when we were kind of midway through our effort in 2024 is that we were made aware of a document that was put out by the National League of Cities and the American Planning Association. And it was this playbook to create a menu of options for housing in your community. And we were like, whoa, we're doing that right now. And it was phenomenal because it, first of all, validated some of our process. And then we were able to use it as a model when we were thinking about, well, what is it that we want this final product to look like? And we, you know, use some of their formatting and so forth. And so, you know, it's going to look different in every community in some ways, but the process as far as making sure the right folks are at the table from the beginning, thinking in advance about what are you solving for, and what's the final product going to look like, and what is the time constraint? We had 1 year because of a grant. That 1 year felt insurmountable, but because we had that deadline to meet our grant deliverable, we were laser focused. We had to have the final product. And so I think if a community is able to bring people together, create a time frame, create a one goal. It might not be the final goal, but a goal, a milestone. I absolutely think that any community could do something similar. I do.
Well, what is next then for Home for All?
Right. Well, you know, as we had hoped, Home for All is now going to look like a lot of different things. Some of our communities are establishing their own community-led housing task forces, which is great. Some of our employers, along with the Northern Kentucky Chamber in their leadership, they created the blueprint for housing, where they took 4 solutions out of the 50 menu of strategies that were really kind of focused on that private sector employer model, and they are really digging into those, which is great. We have certain communities that we're providing as the Area Development District some technical assistance to help them think about site readiness from a residential development standpoint. We often do this from an economic development standpoint. And so I think what you're going to see is different things happening that, you know, we're using the strategies to kind of give examples and help people do their own thing. And then the steering committee continues to meet, and we've got a few regional goals, and so you'll have to stay tuned and see how those play out over the next few months.
We will. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
For our second conversation, we spoke with Kristen Baker, the executive director of LISC Greater Cincinnati and LISC Louisville. Under her leadership, LISC and its affiliates have invested more than $135 million in the Cincinnati region, fueling growth in communities that might otherwise struggle to attract the resources they need. Kristen was at the conference to talk about the ongoing collaborative regional effort across Cincinnati and Hamilton County, Ohio, to implement the Housing Our Future strategy. This strategy provides a roadmap for producing and preserving affordable housing, protecting under-resourced residents from housing insecurity, and aligning local policies and investments.
I'm Kristen Baker. I'm the executive director of LISC Greater Cincinnati and LISC Louisville.
One of the things you're here talking about is the Housing Our Future strategy. What is that?
So Housing Our Future is a 10-year plan for Cincinnati and Hamilton County to help us identify how we're going to produce more housing, how to preserve our existing affordable housing, how to protect vulnerable neighbors, and what are the system changes that we need to undertake as a local government or regionally to make sure that we can really support these goals around creating more housing to meet the needs in our region. We're in year 5, 2025. We launched in the midst of COVID in 2020, which was certainly a pivotal moment, I think, in housing, you know, nationally and locally. And so we have some benchmarks related to production and preservation and investment in housing in this community. And, you know, I would say that it's tough, you know, particularly around housing production. It's really a tough time. It's a tough season in the market, right? Prices have gone way up. The cost escalations that we've experienced, you know, during COVID and now sort of in this post-COVID chapter, there's a lot of challenges, but we have been making progress. And I think that there is room for us to now, as we see the wind down of the federal resources that came to local governments through COVID, the American Rescue Act, and, you know, other tools, as those have been fully expended, now we have an opportunity to revisit and see where do we need to make more investment to keep the momentum going.
What have been some of the biggest challenges in moving from the strategy or that plan and putting that into action?
When we started this work, we really just started with numbers, right? It was like, what's the data telling us about the housing needs in our community? And then, of course, the immediate follow-up question from anyone that we presented this to was, okay, and what do we do about it, right? So that has been, so moving from, yeah, sort of understanding the quantifying the problem, right, to what are the tactics and solutions that we need was an important first step. And I think we also have to keep evolving, right? Especially now with the changes in the federal landscape and the potential changes to federal funds that come into housing at the state and local levels, we have to get creative about thinking about what are the adjustments we have to make in the local marketplace to be able to keep up with the demands and the needs that we know exist and the opportunities, but recognizing that some of the sources might be different now is a challenge.
At the end of this project, how will you measure the success of it?
There's some intangible measurements, right? There's some things that are hard to say, but you know, one thing that I will say that I think this strategy has done is really push the affordability of housing into everyday conversation in a way that was not happening in Cincinnati prior to our work. We were really focused on repopulating the city, bringing back more taxpayers, increasing the tax base, of course, as we need to be. But that was focused primarily on market rate and more luxury, high-end housing, sort of in the, you know, downtown core of the city. And when we started saying, hey, did you know that there are a lot of folks in our community who are spending upwards of 80% of their monthly take-home pay on housing? Did you know that people can't, you know, living in substandard conditions, or they can't stay in the community that they want to be in anymore because the prices have escalated? You know, that has changed. I think there's a lot more awareness about these issues and eagerness for action that can hopefully show up in our, you know, quantitative metrics, right, in terms of the numbers of units that we're producing and preserving as a community and as a region, and the amount of investment that is following into those pipelines is really important.
Is there anything else that you would like people to know about this project, but also about LISC in general?
You know, about the project, I would say that this is a collaborative effort. And one thing that is really exciting about that is that it's not just folks in the housing sector that have come around this. This has been our Chamber of Commerce, other business partners, community partners, healthcare providers, right? This is housing, economic development, and workforce, right? It takes all of us to move. These are not discrete issues. There's so much interplay between housing and all of the factors that create a vibrant community that I think that's really important. And then in terms of LISC, what people should know is that, you know, we are a big national community development financial institution, but we're hyper-local. We live and work in the communities that we focus on, and that really helps us bring our national tools to a local level and to really respond to the needs, the affordable housing financing needs, the economic development needs that we know exist in Greater Cincinnati and in Louisville, and that we want to help be a solution for.
Well, Kristen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
For our final conversation about collaborative efforts to increase the housing supply, we talked to Abby Shelton, Community Development Director for the City of Owensboro. Among other responsibilities, Abby manages the city's U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development entitlement programs and federal grant funding for housing and economic development initiatives. She was at the conference to talk about the Greater Owensboro Area Housing Collaborative, a partnership among the City of Owensboro, Owensboro Health, and Habitat for Humanity that was created to address barriers to safe, stable housing. Owensboro Health donated 17 parcels of land, and Habitat will develop them into affordable homes.
Abby Shelton, Community Development Director for the City of Owensboro. I've been in that capacity for around 10 years now and with the city for about 20 years, so I have a pretty good idea of where we've been and where we're going. So as part of the collaborative, Debbie Zerner, she is with the hospital. They did a community health needs assessment. And along those lines, they look at the social determinants of health, and housing, of course, is one of those needs that we have in our community, and every community has. So to be more cognizant of how they were addressing those needs, she called me a little bit before the November of 2023 and said, hey, Abby, do the housing providers have a regular meeting in Owensboro? And I said, Debbie, you know what? We don't. We're in our silos and we all do our own little things. We communicate, but we don't meet regularly to talk about the projects we're doing. We just read about them in the newspaper. So she got all of the housing providers together. It was the City of Owensboro. The county was invited, our Green River Area Development District was invited because they have their housing projects over there. Audubon Area Community Services, our housing authority, everybody was brought to the table to kind of discuss, all right, what projects can we do to try to help the homeless population, and what housing needs do we have? Well, in 2019, the city conducted a market study to find out what our needs for housing. And that was for the purpose of our consolidated plan for the city of Owensboro, which we have to submit to HUD. So we had a pretty good baseline of where we were. Then the pandemic hit, and that just exasperated everything. So, and everybody around the country is feeling the same kind of hurt with housing just not being produced. So having the knowledge that I did and saying, hey, we've got the backup that says, your study says we need more housing. So we put the numbers to it and threw around different ideas of how we can all collaborate. There were several different ideas thrown out from 2023 to our last meeting. We went to the hospital board and said, hey, you've got these parcels of land that are just sitting mostly vacant. What can we do to collaborate? How can we use these? So we went through a couple different iterations of, well, we could put housing this way on there, or we could put SIP homes on there. And then we kind of took a breath and stepped back and said, well, what's the easiest way to produce the most affordable housing? And at the city, we have several different programs that we use for our home funds, which are federal funds from HUD. And they're specifically used for home ownership. They do have a lot of stipulations on them, but we're pretty well versed and able to navigate those waters. So what I have been doing in my role, in my capacity, I've been building homes, maybe 1 to 2 homes a year. Well, as we all know, with the cost of materials, it's become increasingly hard for me to be cognizant of spending those federal dollars in the right way to produce affordable home ownership. So absorbing that cost was not good for us. So when it came down to it, looking at those 17 parcels of land that the hospital had, and in one of the meetings that we were sitting at, I finally just said, look, and I don't know why I didn't say this sooner, but I think we all had to get to that point to say, all right, I'm going to step back and not build homes anymore, because Habitat can do it the best way, the most affordable way, and they have the homeowner education piece that we need. They have the hand-holding that we need. They have all the different services that those first-time home buyers need, which fits our model for a community housing development organization. So I said, Jeremy at the table, his board chair was sitting next to him. I said, we're just going to make you our CHOTO, and you're going to get a grant from us for every home that you build on those parcels. I don't know what that number is, because he said, let me get through my other projects first. He's got a really great development over at Carter Court, and the hospital's been a partner over there as well. But they have a great way of bringing volunteers together and just doing such a great job at keeping those people in those homes. So at that point, it was decided, well, let's take that to the hospital board. And Debbie Zerner and her team did such a great job, Dr. Tidwell, of advocating for that project. So here we sit today. We're probably about 2 years out, maybe a year and a half now. So I'm going to meet the new director of Habitat, Amanda, and Jeremy's still going to be around. He's working for Audubon now, but we're still in the same cycle. We're still all doing housing. So the collaborative will continue, and we'll push on to try to find new projects and way to serve Owensboro.
Have there been any challenges with trying to align the goals of all three organizations?
No. No, we all work together very well, and I think it's taken years of partnership and people being in certain roles, and there's, you know, the city has a great relationship with the hospital, with Habitat, and vice versa, and all around. So I keep saying, it was a perfect storm.
Are there any specific populations that are going to benefit the most?
Sure. So Habitat's model works with first-time home buyers, people that are this close to owning a home, but they don't have the down payment assistance, or they don't have the financial wherewithal to do so. So they take those people, they go through a rigorous process, and I'm going to misspeak, but I believe it's a very long, maybe year, 2 year process because they have to put so many sweat equity hours into building the other homes. And so that's very important that they have they buy into that process and understand everybody goes, whether you're in Habitat or whether you're just building your credit, everybody goes through a process to own a home, and it's that you don't take it lightly. So Jeremy does a very good job at working with those first-time home buyers and educating them. They've even built a center in honor of their former director, Virginia Braswell, where they bring the homeowners in and train them with financial education and just tasks of how to keep up a home and homeowners insurance and all that fun stuff. So they do. They're the one-stop shop, and I defer to them because they do a great job at it.
So once these homes are built on this land that was donated, are there any projects that you can foresee with the same group or with other groups?
Well, I hope so. I hope this prompts once they see homes going up, which I'm sure people will be very happy with. And it's right next to a farmer's market. It's right next to the hospital, the former hospital, former hospital campus. And they just do quality housing. So, I sure hope so. I know we've gotten some big employers that are locating in Owensboro, and I hope they see what's going on because employer housing also is a very big thing in the country. And so we kind of want to start a look at that and other options we have. People are just now open to exploring those different ways that we can house people and create that workforce housing and create low-income housing and create affordable housing. And, those houses that they're not $400,000. They are $150,000 to $200,000. And there's ways that we can help locally get people into those homes.
Well, could this model be replicated, do you think, in other cities? Or is it just something kind of special about Owensboro?
Well, I'd like to say it's special, but absolutely it could be replicated because, when you have the right people sitting in the right seats and it's easier. But if you don't, and there's pushback. I had a city come up to me and say, we've tried to get our Habitat to be our CHOTO, but they don't want to because of the regulations. And I said, just give us a call. We'll come and talk. And Jeremy's a great guy, and I'm sure he'd be willing to sit down and say, hey, just, open your mind. This is our model. This is how we run things in Owensboro and Davis County, and we'd be happy to come up and talk to you about that. And so it absolutely can be replicated. There's land everywhere. It's just a matter of shaking it loose. So, it can be most definitely. The federal funds are there. So,
well, what's next for the Greater Owensboro Area Housing Collaborative?
Well, we'll meet. We'll talk about the next big project. We've got some developers that have proposed multifamily units in Owensboro, and obviously we're always open to that, but I think more importantly, collaborating and working together on the social determinants of health that the hospital has identified and all the social service agencies that are involved in that collaborative and really addressing those needs of first-time homebuyer, down payment assistance that we can do, addressing the needs that we just have lack of affordable housing and the homeless needs and all that fun stuff that comes in with, hey, this is our job. How do we address helping Owensboro become a better place? So we'll just truck on and whatever comes of it, we'll embrace it and do what we can to make it better.
Well, Abby, thank you for talking with us.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to our special conference edition of Bringing It Home with KHC. For more information on KHC, check out kyhousing.org and listen to all episodes of Bringing It Home with KHC wherever you get your podcasts.